Part C. Directions. You will hear three pieces of recorded material. Before listening to each one, you will have time to read the questions related to it. While listening, answer each question by choosing A, B, C, or D. After listening, you will have time to check your answers. You will hear each piece once only. Questions 11 to 13 are based on the following radio program talking about tree pruning. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 11 to 13.
Trees should only be pruned when there is a good and clear reason for doing so. And fortunately, the number of such reasons is small. Pruning involves the cutting away of overgrown and unwanted branches. And the inexperienced gardener can be encouraged by the thought that more damage results from doing it unnecessarily than from leaving the tree to grow in its own way. First, pruning may be done to make the tree healthier. You may cut out diseased or dead wood, or branches that are rubbing against each other and thus causing wounds. The health of a tree may be encouraged by removing branches that are blocking up the center and so preventing the free movement of air. Secondly, one result of pruning is that an open wound is left on the tree, and this provides an easy entry for disease. But it is a wound that will heal. Often there is a race between the healing and the disease as to whether the tree will live or die, so that there is a period when the tree is at risk. It should be the aim of every gardener to reduce that risk of death as far as possible. It is essential to make the area which has been pruned smooth and clean, for healing will be slowed down by roughness. You should allow the cut surface to dry for a few hours and then paint it with one of the substances available from garden shops, produced especially for this purpose. Pruning is usually done in winter, but then you can see the shape of the tree clearly, without interference from the leaves. And it is, too, very unlikely that the cuts you make will bleed. If this does happen, it is, of course, impossible to paint them properly. Questions 14 to 16 are based on the following monologue. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 14 to 16.
We have saved, as a final set of emotions, the two most important emotions pertaining to other people. Love and its opposite, hate. Love can be seen everywhere, yet surprisingly, love has been the subject of less scientific research than other emotions, such as anger and fear. The reason for this may be twofold. First, love is a very complex emotion, difficult to describe and measure. Secondly, unlike many extreme emotions, extreme love is generally not a problem. Thus, less medical attention has been paid to it. What is love? This is a complex question and requires a complex answer. Love is an enduring, strong, positive attraction and feeling for another person or thing. But it is more than this. It also involves feelings of caring, protection, excitement, and tenderness. When two people are in love, they feel drawn to one another. They greatly enjoy each other's company, and they may be sexually attracted to one another. Sometimes it is easier to think in terms of different kinds of love. Puppy love, romantic love, brotherly love, and so forth. Though they differ in some respects, they share one important characteristic: a strong positive feeling toward another. Our feelings toward other people are often complex. We may love someone and at the same time be angry with him. Or we may love someone even though we are jealous of him. We might even love someone and at the same time hate for some specific reason. Hate is a strong negative emotion towards someone and is due to anger, jealousy, and some other factor. Like love, hate can be a very strong emotion. It can also be very dangerous. The question is often asked, is it bad to hate? The best answer is probably sometimes yes and sometimes no. Usually, hate does not help us. It makes us feel unhappy and makes us do things that may hurt others. However, sometimes it may be necessary to hate and hurt someone in order to protect loved ones.
Questions 17 to 20 are based on a conversation about scientists' views. You now have 20 seconds to read questions 17 to 20. One of the most widely accepted theories, on the origins of the universe, is the so-called Big Bang theory. It sees the universe as originally what's known as a cosmic egg.
What sort of size was that?
Well, in comparison with the universe now, it would have been tiny. Minute.
And then, how did the universe come out of this egg?
Again, this is supposition. A huge explosion took place, which sent material from the egg, expanded the material, which gradually cooled off as it expanded.
What sort of material was it that formed the universe?
It would have been small particles, electrons, protons, neutrons, which, as they expanded, certain pockets of the material would condense into what are now the stars, the planets, and...
Oh, yes, I see. And according to this theory, then the universe is still actually expanding?
Yes, it is. And it will eventually, the scientists believe, come to a stop. And once it does come to a stop, it'll begin contracting. The whole procedure will reverse through gravity, so that the whole universe will collapse back on in itself, into its original state again, as a cosmic egg.
Are you saying the whole process is going to start again, then?
This is what the scientists say. Yes, yes.
I see.
That is the end of Part C.